Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, the UN plans Syrian aid deliveries as the ceasefire generally continues. We'll consider the possible future of Islamic State. Scientists give new hope to controlling locust swarms.
It was an enclosed arena, an area, where locusts were put into, so that you could look at them a lot closer than trying to find millions of them, of course.
In the wild.
Right, in the wild.
Catch a couple in the wild.
A little hard to figure out what they're doing when there's millions of them.
And a rapper takes his anger against the Grammys to Twitter. It's right here on The Voice of America. Despite an exchange of accusations of violations, the U.S.-Russian negotiated ceasefire across Syria continues to hold, except for areas controlled by the Islamic State of the al-Qaeda-affiliated Nusra Front. The Pentagon said U.S.-led coalition airstrikes continued Sunday, with 12 sorties against suspected IS targets in Syria. Meanwhile, the main opposition High Negotiations Committee complained to the U.N. of numerous violations by Damascus and its allies. Nevertheless, the UN and its partner aid organizations are planning to use the lull in fighting to provide life-saving assistance to tens of thousands of Syrians trapped by years of war. U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner described the cessation of hostilities as an important moment.
It's an opportunity, to put it mildly, for all the parties to step up and to do what they must do to stop the violence and bloodshed in Syria and truly press for an end to this conflict, which has cost so many lives and so much suffering, via a political transition in accordance with the Geneva Communique 2012. Without obviously giving a list or going through a list of names, I would just say the vast majority of Syrian armed opposition groups have told the U.S. That they have accepted the terms for the cessation of hostilities. And as I said, many of these groups have made this confirmation either directly to us or through the HNC.
But he declined to provide the number of opposition groups involved or give a list of names for security reasons. Toner said the Cessation of Hostilities Task Force will investigate violations and adjudicate them. A senior U.S. official is quoted as saying, "Setbacks are inevitable," adding the U.S. doesn't expect the violence to end immediately. Regional analyst Amin Sekel of the Australian National University told VOA's Victor Beatty he is surprised the ceasefire is holding, but time will tell if it would lead to a resumption of peace talks.
We will now really have to watch how the ceasefire is going to be translated into something long-term, which could really open the way for negotiations between the Assad regime and opposition forces. But let's not really forget that the Russians and, of course, the U.S.-led international coalition will still continue their fight against Islamic State and the Jabhat al-Nusra. So I think the fighting is still really going on in the north of Syria, and the latest report also suggested that the Islamic State has made some advances against the Kurds in that area.
Is that a big concern, that radical groups like al-Nusra and the Islamic State will take advantage of this ceasefire?
Well, as far as they are concerned, there is no ceasefire, because the declaration of the ceasefire on the part of the United States and Russia really exclude the Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic State. The fight there will really basically continue, and the Jabhat al-Nusra and, for that matter, Islamic State feel under no obligation to observe any ceasefire.
Have the Russian-backed Syrian forces made all the gains they want in and around Aleppo, or do you expect more fighting?
I think there is going to be more fighting, and the Russians will carry out their air operations, although President Obama has made it quite clear that all air operations will stop. But at the same time, as long as the fight against Jabhat al-Nusra and so-called Islamic State continue, then one could not really exclude further air operations on the part of Russia and the Assad Air Force.
UN Special Envoy to Syria Stefan de Mistura has called for a new round of indirect peace talks in Geneva March 7. How likely will that be to get underway?
I think if this ceasefire holds, then there is a good possibility that the negotiation will resume. And again, it may not be face-to-face negotiations. It may be indirect negotiations. But nonetheless, I think that is something that would need to be welcomed, not only by the Syrian people who are very desperate for the longer period of peace and stability, but also by the international community. But I think we will have to really wait and see how the situation is going to evolve from here, and whether these negotiations will start, and if they do start, whether they are going to really drag on for a long time. One could not really expect that there is going to be a respite in immediate terms, but let's hope that in medium to long run, it will produce the desirable results.
Amin Sekel says if humanitarian convoys are allowed to reach civilians and Russia halts attacks on civilian targets, the opposition will come under enormous pressure to engage in serious peace talks to end the conflict. Social media reporter G. Abby Lee is in the studio to talk about yet another boost for the leading GOP presidential hopeful. Hello, G.
Hi, Susan. That's right. We're talking about Mr. Donald Trump once again. He received his first Senate endorsement Sunday evening from Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions. But I wouldn't say go check out the senator's Twitter account because his last tweet was made in 2014. But in case you're still curious, his handle is at Jeff Sessions.
First New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and now Senator Sessions. Not a shabby week for Trump, but there was also some bad news for him, right?
Right. So there's this controversy about a white supremacist group's support for Trump. Some of our listeners may not be too familiar with the group, so I'll explain briefly. The Ku Klux Klan is a group/movement in the U.S. that advocates white supremacy and anti-immigration. The controversy started when the group's former leader, David Duke, expressed strong support for Trump.
I have read that, but it's the reaction to that support that caused a bigger commotion.
Exactly. Trump had an interview with CNN Sunday morning, during which he refused to condemn the group or Duke's support for his presidential campaign. When he was asked to clarify his response, he kept saying he has no knowledge of either Duke or the group. When the internet exploded with people condemning his response or the lack thereof, Trump tweeted, "As I stated at the press conference on Friday regarding David Duke, I disavow." It's worth noting, though, it took him a whole weekend to disavow what many people perceive as a hate group.
What are the other candidates tweeting about this?
As you know, his biggest rival at this point is Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and the two have been verbally attacking each other for some time now. Rubio tweeted, "We cannot be a party that nominates someone who refuses to condemn white supremacists and the KKK." On the Democratic side, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was quick to respond, sending out this tweet. "America's first black president cannot and will not be succeeded by a hate monger who refuses to condemn the KKK." His rival, Hillary Clinton, retweeted that, which many Democrats found quite refreshing. That's all for me today. Susan?
Thanks for the Twitter wrap-up, G. She's on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
About 8 years ago, a pair of astronomers were going through some archival data gathered by a radio telescope when they discovered a mysterious and powerful burst of radio waves that lasted only a few milliseconds. Astronomers at Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia detected another of these fast radio bursts last April and alerted other observatories to their discovery. Soon, a number of radio and optical telescope facilities around the world joined in the search for the signal. After examining a visual image of the FRB, taken a day after the first burst, scientists think they've found where it came from. It may have originated at a location in an elliptical galaxy some 6 billion light years away. Some of the scientists involved in making the finding are also suggesting that these fast radio bursts could generate gravitational waves such as those detected recently by the LIGO Scientific Collaboration. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Islamic State is one of the forces that is fighting in Syria, and it has reached out across the region. To get an update on its status, we're speaking with Paul Salem, a Middle East Institute expert on the region. Now, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
First of all, what is the current state of Islamic State?
The current state is that they are becoming more embattled in their main area of control in Iraq and Syria, although they've survived almost 2 years there, but they're coming increasingly under attack. They are branching out in a significant way in Libya, and that could be perhaps an area they relocate to in a major way if indeed they continue to suffer losses in Iraq and Syria. So I think they are approaching sort of a transition point. They are still powerful, they are still effective, but they are not on the ascendant in Iraq and Syria, although they are in Libya.
Does this mean that the allied forces coming after them and the other forces that have been bombing them have been successful to some degree?
It's a combination of dynamics. One is the international coalition, the air campaign, the blocking of finance, stopping of oil sales, blocking of movement of fighters. There's also been significant successes by the Iraqi army and federal police and people there, both in Tikrit and Ramadi, and they are now preparing for the liberation of Mosul, Iraq's second largest city. And in Syria, the Kurdish forces have been very effective in pushing ISIS back. ISIS is also at war with the Syrian regime and the Syrian rebels. So all of this combination of forces, in addition to the fact that the populations where ISIS is have, they have not risen up, but they have not been cooperative either.
Would you say that ISIS forces have not made themselves welcomed by residents of the areas in which they're fighting? They seem to be ruling by terror and fear and humiliation rather than getting the local people to support them.
Yeah, that has been consistently the case. Small minorities in these communities have supported them or joined them, often because, you know, there were very few options left to them. These were the powers that were there, and some people dealt with them. But there's no doubt in the areas that they've taken over, there's no real appetite, there's no support for this type of very gruesome, very radical rule. Now, at the same time, these populations have not risen up, but they have not been supportive, and they've often been very useful for outside powers in terms of information and intelligence.
Do you see the day when we'll be free of ISIS, or is this something that's going to be with us forever?
I see a day where we will be free of ISIS in some important patches of the world. I think they will be defeated in Iraq this year and possibly in Syria this year or the next. But I think as a mindset, as a global network, we will not be rid of it because it will survive in this or that ungoverned space around the world. I think, though, it will become more like Al-Qaeda, which is simply a network and ideology that unfortunately will live on, even if it does not succeed in securing a major base, you know, on the ground.
Well, thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you.
A swarm of locusts, often of millions of bugs, can destroy an entire cropland in minutes. Insecticides are used to try to control the clouds of bugs, but many poor nations from Africa to South America to Asia can't afford the resources. But a team of researchers in England is working on the problem and has created a mathematical model of a locust swarm to help create new strategies. Correspondent Deborah Block is following this problem and has joined me here in the studio. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you very much, Susan.
So, what did the researchers find?
Very interesting to use a mathematical model, something very new. This group of researchers, first of all, what they did is they used some film that was filmed in Adelaide, Australia. And it was an enclosed arena, an area where locusts were put into, so that you could look at them a lot closer than trying to find millions of them, of
in
course.
The wild.
Right, in the wild.
Catch a couple in the wild.
A little hard to figure out what they're doing when there's millions of them. And so what they did is they watched them, of course, and they discovered that while swarming, that the locusts usually move in the same direction as their immediate neighbors. But then they spontaneously switch direction as a group. So they thought, well, why do they do that? So they thought, well, let's try putting a few locusts in this arena. And they found out, well, they don't pay any attention to each other. But he said, as soon as you put more in there, one of the scientists said, they start to march together in the same direction, either clockwise or counterclockwise. And this becomes something that they do spontaneously. So then again, they'll all switch direction at the same time and move around, which is what they actually do when they're, you know, eating all the cropland.
So the scientists thought, well, how do they even start a swarm? So they figured out that it doesn't take a whole lot of locusts to do this. The most important thing that they found is if you just put two locusts in one direction and you put one coming in another direction, the two locusts can turn around this individual. So what this all means, Susan, is there is a mathematical formula to how they move. And now they're trying to figure out how can we use this to try to control them.
What might this mathematical model lead to?
Well, these scientists are thinking that since these locusts are sensitive to uncertainty, that maybe aircraft like a helicopter or an airplane could help break up this swarm. So that would create disturbances in the air that might get them confused. Other possibilities they're thinking is maybe perhaps using some sort of ultrasonic device to disturb the locusts. But for now, as you mentioned already, the best ways that the farmers, scientists know of right now is just insecticide, which isn't necessarily the best things to use. People like to find other ways. It's hard to use it because this is involving huge areas. And so the best way for now, scientists say, is to try to prevent the insects from breeding and swarming in the first place. But they're still working on that, too.
Well, the thing about locusts is that they are edible. You can't eat them.
Yes. You know, I knew you were going to ask that question. That is so funny. I was thinking, I bet Susan's going to ask me about that. Yes, indeed. There are actually different types of locusts. I mean, they are obviously all related. And people do eat them, just like they do grasshoppers, since they're in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
And with millions of them out there, I am sure there are plenty to choose from if people so desire and want to eat them.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for stopping by.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Rapper Kanye West has taken his raw emotions to Twitter again, this time accusing the Grammy Awards of racism and asking for a meeting with the head of the Recording Academy. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the incident and what resulted from it.
Well, you know, Kanye has this habit of using Twitter as his, I call it like his personal diary. You know, these are the things that late at night you're supposed to write down in your diary, streams of consciousness, if
dear,
you will.
Dear diary,
right,
today.
They don't necessarily make sense. And the reality is most people don't care, but you just got to get it off your chest. Well, this is what Kanye has been doing for the last few weeks. And on Wednesday, those of us who follow him were blessed with 36 tweets in a row about so many things, as you mentioned, the main issue being his problem with the Grammy Awards. And let's be clear that this is not a new thing for Kanye. This is just a new set of tweets about an issue that he's been talking about for years and years and years. So, yes, he tweeted. The first tweet was very simply, I would like to sit down with Neil Portnow right now. And he went on to talk about the Grammys being important, but there are a lot of artists that are not being recognized and the awarding system is way off and completely out of touch, and that, you know, he is the most important living artist talking. And I'm quoting, if I'm not at the show next year, then there is no show, on and on and on and on. And then he ends it with, I got a new album coming out this summer.
Well, now, he also said something in the middle of this, accusing the Grammys in a non-subtle way of racism. He said, you guys are supposed to be all about taste. And he said, you like your black people a certain way. Also, you wouldn't have Future perform, and that man owned the clubs last summer.
Right, talking about Future, the producer. And he went on to talk about a few other artists that he really wanted to have featured. But what I thought was really interesting was the response from Neil Portnow. Like, a lot of times he'll go after people and they'll kind of ignore him. But the Recording Academy CEO and the president, Neil Portnow, came out and said, quote, Kanye West is a creative pioneer who has been recognized and honored by the Recording Academy time and time again. We value his input as a member of the creative community, and he welcomes Kanye to engage in a direct and productive dialogue about the future of music. So he actually went on and tweeted, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, I'm not on Twitter, but if you want to meet, let's do this. So, I don't know. Maybe this time Kanye's Twitter rant will actually end in some productive conversation and change to the Recording Academy, which I think a lot of artists would like to see.
You know, I wonder, okay, how much of this is actual expression of the person's feelings? And how much of this is their marketing department saying, if you do this, you will get traction and your album will get attention?
Well, I think Kanye has an evil genius in his head. You know, I think it's the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. Because Kanye does this on stage as well. So this isn't just what we see on Twitter. We're going to see this on any stage that he gets on and is allowed any, you know, time that he's not singing or dancing to say something. He's going to continue to let everyone know what's on his mind, whether or not it makes logical sense. All right, Kanye, he's gonna say it, so who knows?
All right, well, what do you think? You can send us a tweet on Twitter at @VOA_IE for International Edition. You can also hit Shauna up. Her handle is @VOA Lady DJ or @VOA_music.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and the Coca-Cola Company have announced support for a new program in Nigeria under the Water and Development Alliance, also known as the WADA Project. The $2 million project will provide up to 100,000 citizens in Cross River State with access to safe drinking water and good sanitation facilities by 2019. This joint investment is aligned with USAID and Coca-Cola's shared focus on clean water provision as a means to help build healthy, sustainable communities in Nigeria. The U.S. government is committed to engaging in effective and innovative alliances with committed partners to support Nigeria's critical development needs, said William Stoyer, acting U.S. Consul General in Lagos. We are proud to collaborate with Coca-Cola to bring a sustainable and safe water solution to thousands of people in Nigeria, he added. During the signing event, USAID Mission Director to Nigeria, Michael Harvey, said, "Today we are consolidating a special partnership, one in which a private firm has joined with a U.S. government agency to contribute to a priority set by the government of Nigeria." USAID and Coca-Cola have collaborated in Nigeria since 2007. The partnership has improved water resource management and expanded sustainable access to safe drinking water and sanitation services in Kano and in Yugu states. The WADA project helps to control and prevent water-related diseases such as cholera, typhoid, and diarrhea by providing water and sanitation services, hygiene education, and establishing water, environment, and sanitation committees in communities where the project works. This new agreement will provide a framework to implement WADA and to allow the parties to establish a range of policy issues to achieve their shared objectives in Nigeria. The United States is proud to work with Nigeria and its international and private sector partners to give the Nigerian people better access to something all human beings need, safe drinking water.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.